Moral Revolution community, welcome back to our podcast. I'm so glad you joined us today. We're going to dive into all things God's design for healthy sexuality. Let's talk about it.
Welcome to the Let's Talk About It podcast. Sorry that we don't have video today, just on audio. So if you can't tell from my voice, this is Cole. And really excited about our guest today. We have Benji Nolo. You've heard him from the past podcasts. It's an organization that we work with on a lot of different projects. Love Exodus Cry. Love you, Benji. Thanks for being here. Glad to jump into a really easy topic to talk about today.
Yeah, right. Thanks so much for having me on. No, I appreciate you guys so much. And it's great to talk with you.
Yeah. You know, whenever we have Benji, you know, we're always going to talk about some lighthearted topic that is really casual and easy to stomach, right? That's the kind of stuff
no.
you get to dabble with.
Is my reputation that bad?
our reputation is that bad. You know, when you have a nonprofit organization that focuses primarily on sex and things of that nature, just kind of comes with the territory, right?
It does. I feel like I have sort of like become that guy, you know, which is strange because I grew up like, I don't know, I always feel, when I feel most connected to myself is in a place of innocence, like, and I feel like there's such a part of who I am. Like, yeah. I feel like I've always connected with my inner child in that way that has kind of carried me through life and in many ways kept me very naive.
Yeah.
So it's strange for me, you know, to be a person who has really stepped into a career of exploring the dark side of humanity.
Yeah.
And it's like it says in Daniel 2:22 that God sees what is in the darkness, but light dwells with him.
Yeah.
And it's Raised on Porn. This doc that we just did is no different. It explores the dark side of porn's impact on consumers.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I don't know. Where do you want to go with that?
I think just for those that don't know who you are, just to give you a little background on Benji. So Benji leads Exodus Cry. It's an organization that really creates awareness around some of the darkest areas of sexuality throughout the globe. Yeah, and started with Nefarious, which you can watch on Amazon Prime. It's a doc on human trafficking. Then they went and created, said, hey, what would create this need for human trafficking and paid for sex organization? And they created a doc called Liberated that you can see on Netflix that really tries to unpack hookup culture in America and throughout the globe. And now the next step has been Raised on Porn to give you just the real brief consolidated history of Exodus Cry for those that maybe don't know. And so whenever they put out one of these awareness campaigns, our team at Moral Revolution just jumps on it. For those that know Moral Rev, we really are more of a resource ministry. We try to create resources to help the wholeness. Basically, we want to help fix everything that Benji's bringing light to. It's a pretty cool partnership. But with Raised on Porn, as soon as I saw this doc, like, you guys sent it over to us before you sent it out to ask us to screen it. And man, it immediately, I went home that night. Kate wasn't in the office. So I'm like, babe, this feels like the most important thing in the next 5 to 10 years to me. It felt that critical, felt that important for the world to see. We put a ton of effort into it. We even created a parenting course to help resource from it. But, you know, it immediately watching it, knowing what we know, being in the conversations that we're in leading Moral Revolution, it was, I don't know that there could have been I don't think that there's anybody that could have done a better job than what you guys did to communicate this story the way that you did it. And so I would love, for those that haven't watched it, first of all, you've got to go watch this as soon as we're done. You've got to watch Raised on Porn. It's on YouTube. You can look it up on YouTube. But I'd love for you, Benji, just to kind of talk about, first of all, what led you guys to do this? Why was this the next step? Like, what brought you to doing this doc on this topic?
That's a great question. In 2007, we decided to tell the story of human trafficking. And I had this thought that it would take 6 weeks for us to go on a trip where we could sort of document human trafficking and then, you know, get a film out. But that decision ended up taking 4 years. We ended up traveling across four continents, 19 countries and 42 cities to document the global phenomenon of sex trafficking. During that time, we began to see some overlapping and underlying realities that were fueling this industry and marketing this industry and creating the appetite for. And so it was during that time that we realized that this issue is bigger and more intricately connected to a broader scope of factors than we can possibly tell in one film. And so we decided to go on the journey of telling this story as a mosaic, if you will. So there's many different various moving parts, and each one kind of warrants its own story. So for me, I feel like this is a life calling. You know, my life is limited. It's finite. These projects take a lot of time. I feel like my life's calling is to tell these stories in a way that peel back the layers and allow people to see the reality of what's going on in our world. I think that awareness and education is a critical and essential part of beginning the journey of like making a difference. Yeah. And so during the transatlantic slave trade, you know, there was a whole cover narrative about slavery, that the slaves were well taken care of, that they provided on the trip across the Atlantic, that they provided every African delicacy and played the African music that they enjoyed and perfumes. When you read some of these old writings, the propaganda was put out.
Wow.
It's wild. And so what needed to happen was for some grassroots abolitionists to uncover the deeper truth about slavery so that people in society would be compelled to do something to make a change.
Yep.
And so for me, this is an area where I feel particularly called is to stare at the evil of this injustice in all of its many layers and to begin to peel those back so that people can see the realities of what we're dealing with. So our progression went from looking at the problem of sex trafficking, call it the rotten fruit, if you will.
Yeah.
And then going on the progression down the rabbit hole, down to the trunk, the infrastructure of the commercial sex industry, into the roots, which is demand, into the soil, which is, you know, cultivating that root system, which is pornography and the pornographic culture that we live in. So we made Nefarious that gave people a global snapshot of sex trafficking. Then we moved on to Liberated to show the cultural underpinnings. And then we moved on to Raised on Porn, which quantifies the impact of porn's impact on consumers. And so that's kind of where we're at in our journey right now. We have some more things coming up. But I think the thing, I'll just say this last thing, I think the thing that's resonating for you, like in hearing you talk about it, I mean, for sure, like, you know, we're super, feel super grateful for these, to be able to make these films. We feel proud of the work that we pour into them, but it's not, you know, this isn't like a Christopher Nolan film, right? I think the thing that's resonating for you is on a more deeper cellular level. And it's the conscious and unconscious recognition that there's something pregnant in you and it's pregnant in our world right now, which is the unconscious and sometimes conscious recognition that pornography is having a deeply profound impact on a generation in a way in which almost nobody can conceive of. Yeah. And so this film, I think, pricks a ray of light into that darkness and gives validation to that and says, no, this public health crisis is actually real.
So sum that up right there, because I don't know that a lot of people would call pornography a public health crisis, right? Like they would say, this is my own decision. Who am I hurting? This is a really great way to express my sexual needs because there's not somebody else that's being hurt by it. I can release my aggressions there. Right? Like you think of, no, a lot of what I'm saying is probably outside of the Christian walls, but there's a lot of dialogue around there and a lot of, hey, don't mess with our porn, mm-hmm. right? Like you guys have experienced that a lot. I mean, we posted mm-hmm. one of your videos and got shut down for a week at one point when you know, if you remember that with the Pornhub thing. And so this is a calf that people don't want to be messed with.
Yeah.
And they have done a great job of telling themselves that nobody's being hurt by it. So how do you jump from, hey, this is nobody's being hurt, this is just me, to public mm-hmm. health crisis? Help us bridge that.
Well, I like to make a distinction between how I talk about this issue to people who are consuming versus our systems level analysis. Because I think for people who are consuming pornography, I think there are some ways to speak to them compassionately about their own compulsion in a way that can help eradicate some of the shame that keeps right. them in that like
yep.
ping pong relationship with shame and behavior and acting out. And, but when it comes to a systems level analysis, you know, I had to step back after creating Nefarious and come to terms with the role that I saw pornography playing in sex trafficking and how it was overlapping
yeah.
into this world. And so, so I put a lot of thought into that. I called a couple of my colleagues together and we began to whiteboard this and really to try to kind of like digest and what it is that we're dealing with, pull it apart and come up with a plan for how to address it. And so the two things that we distilled down were this idea of pornography as a public health crisis. And when I say that, what I'm talking about is pornography's impact on consumers, quantifying the way in which pornography is impacting consumers and particularly children. Mm-hmm. So that was one aspect of this. The other aspect of it was looking at the human rights crisis. So how pornography was being created,
yeah.
the impact of it on performers. And so our starting point was those two realities, the public health and the human rights crisis of pornography. And so on the public health side, when we began to look into the research that was beginning to come out about this, and we began to talk to neurologists and sociologists and experts of varying backgrounds on this, the picture became more and more and more disturbing.
Yeah.
And that's when we felt like we have to sound the alarm on this
yeah.
because I think parents are unaware. I think your average porn consumer is really not aware of the potential damage. And so that those are a lot of things that, I mean, we can tease out it to the extent that you would like to do that. But that was just kind of, in a nutshell, how we began to think about approaching this.
So if you were to, and I guess in a statement or a paragraph mm-hmm. from, you know, everything that you guys have, you're on this, what, 14-year journey now of trying to reverse engineer one of the darkest aspects of human sexuality being mm-hmm. sex slavery and human mm-hmm. trafficking, mm-hmm. getting, and those breadcrumbs are leading you back down to... Mm-hmm. you know, pornography, because mm-hmm. pornography, most people wouldn't connect it to human trafficking, would not say that. It's almost like, you remember when we were young in the 90s, you know, marijuana is the gateway drug. If you smoke weed, you're definitely going to go to coke, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, there's a lot of people, well, porn is not going to lead to human trafficking for me, right? Like they're,
right.
It's hard for them to jump to that. But what would you say, and if you could put that in a nutshell, what is our children finding porn? Because the average age a child finds mm-hmm. porn is what? It was 12 years old, 8 to 11, I think, in that range, right? Mm-hmm. One stat that stood out to me from the doc that I hadn't come across before was that in order for a child to actually get to nonviolent porn, they'd have to search for 13 minutes. They'd mm-hmm. actually have to ignore, like move on from video to video for 13 minutes to get to nonviolent mm-hmm. pornography. Like that was astounding to me. So wow. when you talk about, you know, that, what would you say is the number one or number two, the top two things that pornography is doing that is fueling that? Like, what's the thing that it's Mm-hmm. What's the impact that it's having on the lives of these kids, these men, these women?
Mm-hmm. I think just to recognize that, you know, what we're doing on this podcast, what you guys are doing, is something that most people are not, which is even just taking time to think about it. Because I think our sexuality is so primal that it activates the reptilian brain into consumptive, mm-hmm. you know, impulses. And when pornography is so accessible, it's easy to bypass any conscious kind of consideration for what I might be consuming. And especially since it's so intimately and directly connected to our system of arousal and our reward system through orgasm. And so I think that part of the value of this conversation is just taking the time to say, we should think about this.
Yeah.
And in doing so, for us, I want to just go back for a second just to give a little bit of context for answering your question, because I didn't start out so when I got into this, so I was led by the image of a girl being abducted, and literally, I mean, the first story that I heard was this girl in Arizona, 15 years old, who was abducted off her driveway,
right,
put into a cage and prostituted out to men out of an apartment.
That's the picture.
Gang raped into it.
A lot of people have.
So that led me into it. At that time, I wasn't thinking pornography, you know.
Yeah, sure.
So it was really through the course of exploring the world of human trafficking that my whole vision was expanded. And it was experiences like going to Amsterdam, walking through the red light district, and seeing the streets littered with pornography, or people handing you cards of pornography of the women in the windows as a way to market them.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing of like seeing that pornography was being used to market trafficking and help create the appetite to consume those women in trafficking.
Yeah.
And then when we went to Southeast Asia, we discovered a situation where pornography was actually being used to normalize and train the child sex slaves into how to perform when they were being used in trafficking. So pornography is actually being used as a way, as a training vehicle for sex trafficking victims. And then we went to actually begin talking to the men who were purchasing women for sex. Every one of them, without fail, had a history of pornography consumption that grew and grew and grew to a point that they began to want to act out their illicit fantasies on somebody who they could just pay to perform whatever fantasy it was.
Yeah.
And so their sexuality became very transactional. And then we began to look at the porn industry and interview some people in the porn industry. And I began to realize when we started to pull on that thread that much of the pornography that's created is through the use of coercion. And so we began to see that pornography was not only marketing trafficking, that it was not only fueling the demand for trafficking, that it wasn't used just to train trafficking victims, but it actually was trafficking.
Yeah.
In many, many cases. And so there's all these overlapping factors that just cause us to have a whole different view of porn.
Yep.
Hey, we want to take a quick break from this podcast to tell you about the newest thing from War Revolution. It's called Porn is Lying to You. Check it out, pornislying.com. We have key resources to help you get involved, get healed, spread the word through social and sweatshirts, save children. You can check it out and continue to fight the fight against porn.
I think that those layers are what I hope we can help people connect with, because I think that the view of porn would be, like, if we just went to the extreme stereotype, 16-year-old boy in his bedroom at night on a phone.
Yeah.
Right? Like that. That's what most people's association would be.
Sure.
let's just go hypothetical. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, you're not a doctor, so you probably, you can't necessarily say this from a political or from a medical standpoint, but that boy that's sitting at home, the stereotypical scenario, what's going on right now in his development? Let's say he found it at 10 years old. He's been looking at it for 6 years, high schooler. What's taking place on the micro level in his world that is in his development, his brain? Mm-hmm. What did you guys uncover in this process about how this is impacting the individual?
Mm-hmm. I have to sit with that question because it's, you know, we can talk about this intellectually, and I think that's important. Like, but when you really begin to hold the lives of these people in your heart who are affected by this, it's deeply tragic.
Yeah.
And I think that we have to create room for that in even the way that we process this phenomenon. What we are talking about is, you know, lives being completely hijacked.
Before they even had the choice to be hijacked.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I used to have a chip on my shoulder about men who use porn because I began to see how I was feeling trafficking. And then I remember one day I was praying in a rather condemning way against the men who look and watch porn. And I suddenly, God gave me a vision of an 11-year-old boy.
Yep.
And I just began to weep because I realized that before these men made a choice to watch pornography, that it had come trespassing into their lives and hijacked their lives. And so
it's so good, Benji.
When you put it in that framework, yeah. it's heavy for me because of so many men who we've talked to that started at that age. And yeah. I think like Raised on Porn addresses that, some of those stories, a little bit, but it's crazy to think about, like, man, at a young age, as a young teenager, you could watch something that has the capacity to literally derail your entire life.
Before you're even in a relationship, before you even know how to have a relationship. You know, that was, we had done a screening of it. And one of the trips that we had taken, you know, Kate and I use it quite a bit. And it was a really powerful moment afterwards. You know, the film got done, and we had intended to dialogue. Like, okay, let's mm-hmm. talk about how we think this is impacting culture. But you couldn't, there was weeping everywhere. There was just brokenness and healing going on at the same time simultaneously. And what was so powerful is one guy in particular said, I think he was, you know, young 20s, had been looking at porn for quite a while since he was a child. And he said, this is the first time I haven't felt shame about porn. And he said, I actually realize like this happened to me. And it was the film that helped him realize that and instantly gave him the freedom to say, all right, Lord, take this from me. It was a really powerful moment. And I remember watching it that time in particular. That was probably my second or third time watching through it with this group that we'd screened it with. And it just came out when I grabbed the microphone to talk, and I said, what this film does such a good job of demonstrating is that we have an entire generation that's been sexually assaulted. Mm-hmm. And when you put it the way that you just did, it's easy to judge the 34-year-old married man or 34-year-old married woman, but you have to track it back to the 10-year-old that had no clue what they were getting into and realizing pornography is sexually assaulting our children.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. And now we don't classify it as sexual assault, just like we didn't know how to classify human trafficking and all of its variations for a while, right? Mm-hmm. Like you had the picture of the girl that got kidnapped and put in a cage. That was the only picture some people had of human trafficking. Now we understand there's a much broader picture of what human trafficking looks like. I think one of the things that I hope that we can pull from this doc and from the awareness is realizing that we're allowing our kids to be sexually assaulted by this, and they're turning into adults that are struggling to find their footing in their marriages. They're struggling to find their footing in their relationships due to the impact that this is having on their childhood. I know we're so grateful for you guys going after these things.
Thank you.
You know, I don't know if you have any other thoughts you want to wrap up with, or
I think, you know, what you mentioned that about that guy, I think just self-compassion is so helpful.
That's good.
In the healing process, you know, and I hope for anybody out there that does struggle with porn, that they will have a similar moment of self-realization that, you know, it wasn't your fault. Like, this was something that trespassed into your life at a tender age. It is a form of neuro rape, you know, and like you said, like many of us were assaulted as children, by this. So I wanted just to kind of wrap up your initial question. Let's just think about this for a second. So you're 16 years old, you're there, you're looking at porn. What actually is happening? Well, what we know about our humanity, first of all, is that sexuality isn't something that you get out of. Every single one of us has a sexuality. It's extremely fragile. I mean, just thoughts even that are expressed can have a defiling impact on us from another person. You can feel it. Women talk about this in their body.
Yeah.
And so that really begins to help paint a picture of our sexual fragility. And especially as we're at a tender age, we're also social beings. So we internalize the stories around us and the construction of our identity, our worldview, our values. And so when somebody is exposed to pornography, it's not just the image of sexuality that they're being confronted with. That tsunami would be bad enough in terms of disrupting their sexual serenity with these hardcore graphic. I mean, what we know is now commonplace in pornography. That would be bad enough. But it's also they're getting exposure to a worldview that is very cleverly crafted by pornographers and meant to convey an image of who men are, who women are, what sex is for. So you're really becoming immersed into an entire world, and you don't come away from that world unchanged. I like to think about it as the porn universe.
Yeah.
And then pornographers are giving you an avatar to navigate that universe.
Yeah.
Whether you're a man or a woman, there's the porn man and the porn woman. So if I'm a 16-year-old boy looking at this, I'm accessing this universe with all these values in it through the vehicle of this man who is fulfilling a certain role. Well, he's emptied of his humanity. He has no compassion. He's a life support system for his erect penis. That's it. He exists as an entity to dominate, subjugate, and abuse and humiliate women within this universe, right? And so if I'm this age, I don't know what sex is for. Like, I'm still going through my own biopsychosocial development as a human being, and suddenly I'm exposed to these potent, intensely sociopathic, graphic, dehumanizing depictions of masculinity and sex and relationship to women. That has a fracturing effect on the individual sociologically, neurologically, emotionally, and so it retards the development of the individual, and it hijacks and derails their healthy sexual development and even their emotional and spiritual development. And so when we consider pornography in context to the well-being of our young people, we have to recognize the crises that is at work from the standpoint of the mass proliferation of this without any age verification walls in place. It is literally a city without walls. And
it's Sodom and Gomorrah online without walls that you can come into whenever you want, and every age can come in. A five-year-old can walk into Sodom and Gomorrah online with no preventative measures. It's crazy.
We're all being exposed to this global orgy that is around us, and it's the impact of it is a corporately sexually traumatized planet. And so it's important to really step back from pornography and to look at the big picture, because people get caught up in the micro. You know, I think to provide a proper analysis of anything, you have to go micro lens and then macro lens. And a lot of people are stuck in the micro lens of like, well, this person said they like it, so that's good enough for me. And it's like, if that's your only analysis, you're not really going to get a clear picture of what's happening.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to pull back and look at a macro level analysis to see the sinister work of pornography at work in our world, and the way it's undermining and sabotaging a generation's ability to connect sexually. Which is the ultimate irony, because the very thing that is supposed to be enhancing our sexuality is actually diminishing it and preventing us from having healthy connection.
Yeah, man, it's so good. Thank you. I mean, it's rare that we have a conversation that I'm not walking away from like with my fists up ready to fight somebody. In a good way.
Come on.
I want to give you guys just some resources. You know, I'm imagining that there's a lot of things going on in your brain, maybe some self-awareness. For those that porn is an issue currently, I want to tell you about Porn Freedom. It's a course that we have on our website. John Bevere created it. You can go to Moral Revolution to the courses. Get a hold of that at moralrevolution.com. Also, Braveco is a phenomenal online 12-month discipleship program led by Jason Valadin. Really significant. It's weekly live meetings, small group based, really powerful. I mean, you're really not going to get totally free from pornography from a course. It's got to be connection as well. Not, you know, courses help. And so you want to check that out. And then for those that are parents, I want to lead you to Porn Prevention. And we'll put links to all three of these things in the show notes. But Porn Prevention is actually a resource we created for parents of what to do in your home to have the right conversations, to protect your kids, to guard them, to prevent accidental exposure. And if accidental exposure has already happened, what do we do now? So those are some of the courses. Again, they'll be in the show notes. Glad you guys are part of the Moral Revolution family. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next month.
Thank you guys for listening. If you want to learn more and check out all of our awesome content, be sure to head to our website at moralrevolution.com and our socials, Instagram, Facebook, all of them. But before you leave, don't forget to like, review, subscribe, all of the things. We want you guys to come back and join us. We enjoyed having you. See you next time.